Real Estate Money and More Podcast, Episode 5.
You finally found it. Welcome to the show that helps thousands with real estate, money, and a whole lot more. Now here is our host, Shane Willis.
Well, hello, and welcome to Real Estate, Money, and a Whole Lot More. My name's Shane Willis, and this is the podcast for investors and entrepreneurs to get ideas and tips that can help them succeed financially and in life. It is my sincere hope that we can be a small part in helping you get to the next level. And getting to that next level, thank you so much for joining us. Today we're going to talk about a really long sale. It's actually what it should be called. Instead, it's called a short sale process. What is a short sale process, and what is the short sale process, and should you be considering a short sale process? There are some people out there today that should be considering a short sale process that are not, because they think they can hang on and they're touching retirement money, which is not something you should be touching because that's non-touchable money. But anyways, that's what we're going to discuss on today's show. I did want to get a little something out. We got a letter in the mail this past week that I wanted to share everybody. I was very honored and humbled to get a letter inviting my wife and I, Angela and I, to the National Academy of Best-Selling Authors. Apparently, it is anticipated that the book that Brian Tracy, Nick Nanton, and myself have written called Transform. I'll put a link in the show notes to some updated information on that, including the press release. Is going to be a bestseller. And it's because anything Brian Tracy writes is a bestseller. So the Academy actually has already said they anticipate this to be a bestseller. So they have invited us out to Los Angeles in September, where my wife and I guess, will receive a Quilly Award, apparently, according to this letter. It's kind of like the Oscars for authors, if you will. You get a statue just like you would an Emmy or an Oscar, except it's a quill. So, yeah, apparently we're going to be getting a Quilly Award for that book. And it hasn't even released yet. So, my goodness, that just surprises me that I got that already. I think it's probably because they anticipate Brian Tracy's book to become a bestseller. And the book's coming out early September, and apparently this award is in late September. So I'll keep you guys posted, and make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and I'll put those links in the show notes as well. So if you're looking for the show notes, if you're listening to this on your car or going down the road, go to realestatemoneyandmore.com/short-sale. Again, that's realestatemoneyandmore, all one word, .com/short-sale. That'll give you some show notes, and I'll kind of give you some updates on what's going on with that. I'll also give you a link to our Facebook page and our Twitter page, as we're going to be doing some updates with this award that's forthcoming, I guess. A little, shocked, humbled about it. I've definitely got the face and the physique for radio, so if they're talking about cameras and shots and stuff of that nature, I guess we'll just have to start working out tomorrow. actually, I have been working out. We've been working out for about 10 days now. P90X3, that's a tough program. But let's talk about real estate instead of talking about this right now. Let's talk about a short sale. What is a short sale? Well, first of all, let's go off the definition. Why is it called short sale? When someone sells a property short, that means that they are selling the property for less than what they owe on the property. So, for instance, let's say you owe $200,000 on this property, and it's really only worth about $125,000. Well, when you sell it for $125,000, but you owe $200,000, you're selling it short of what you owe, hence the name short sale. So that's where the name come from. Now, if we talked about the time it took to complete the sale, we would be calling it a really long sale, because it does take quite a bit of time to get this done. Now, let me kind of walk you through the process of what happens with a short sale. And one of the things that you want to understand of why you would want to go through this process. And let's just talk about that now. What is the biggest reason why you would want to go through this process? Well, instead of just handing the keys over to the bank, here you go, I can't afford this house anymore. Tough luck, talk to you later. If that happened, then let's go back to our we owe $200,000 scenario. Sorry, I had to take a drink of water. We owed $200,000 scenario, and we just hand them the key, and it's worth $125,000. Well, if they sold it at the foreclosure steps, they go out and they sell the property as a foreclosure, and it sells for $100,000. It's worth $125,000, but it sits vacant for a year or 2 years, and then it sells for $100,000. The bank has the right to come after us for the difference. It's called a deficiency judgment. That's what it's called. They have the right to come after you for that $100,000 difference. And it's not just that $100,000 difference. It's also the money that it cost them to take it through the courts. Some states are judiciary states. Some states are non-judiciary states. But there's still legalities and costs that are accrued during this process. And they can tap that onto the principal balance that they lost and send it to you in the form of a judgment. So now you've walked away, but now all of a sudden you have a $110,000 judgment or a $120,000 judgment. Good luck trying to buy anything in the future. You've got to either negotiate that judgment away, or we can talk about bankruptcies. I'm no attorney. I'm not going to go there. But that's one of the main reasons we do these short sales, is to get out of that judgment. Most of the short sales that I have completed over the last couple of years have, in the approval letter, said that you, if once successful completion of this short sale, you owe us nothing after this. Nothing. Which means they waive the right to a deficiency judgment. So you really can pop the champagne, and we're done with this property. Now, I tell you all this. Some of you know my story. Some of you don't. I know I said in either last week's episode or a couple of weeks back that I had a foreclosure on our home. We've also had to go through a short sale. So when I talked with distressed homeowners, I understand, because I've been from A to Z with it. I've done all the way for both of them. I've had a foreclosure on my credit. I have a short sale there. I understand how it works. Are you going to take a hit with a short sale? Probably. Is it much more short term? Yes. Yes, it is. So you need to look and evaluate at what this short sale process could do for you in the long term. But the main reason we do it is to avoid that deficiency judgment. You do not want that deficiency judgment there. Now, sometimes, and I do say sometimes, the bank will also offer a relocation assistance, meaning they will give you money for completing the short sale to help you relocate wherever you're going to. Now, we can talk about the HAFA, the Home Affordability Financing Alternative Act. That was one that offered money as an incentive to help you complete a short sale. But even the banks themselves come up with some of those incentives. Because when you get a property as a foreclosure, you spend money on it. So if they can spend money to you and successfully complete a short sale and not have to finalize a foreclosure, they actually come out ahead. So the banks want you to do these short sales. And with them waiving the deficiency rights, you have an incentive to do them as well. So it may seem like a whole lot to it, which it is. There's a lot to it. But everybody comes out ahead on these, the banks, us, as the homeowners or the investment property owners, they all come out ahead on these. So it is something to seriously consider if you're struggling to continue to make the payments on a property. If a property rate is adjusting and it's going to be too much to handle, or if you've lost some income, or I've seen them a lot, you know, divorce, a death in the family. income has dropped drastically. So we can't afford to keep this property. A short sale may make sense. So let's go into what a short sale process is. What happens? Well, to begin with, and it's all lender specific because there are some processes that some banks have and others don't, but I'm going to kind of give you the basics. To begin with, you probably want to meet with a realtor. I would suggest that you look up someone who is certified distressed property expert certified. That is a designation that a lot of realtors around the country have. I currently hold that designation. It's called the CDPE, or Certified Distressed Property Expert. That course was actually designed to teach realtors how to complete a short sale, what the banks are looking for. Now, if you know anything about my background, I owned a mortgage company for well over a decade. So I kind of knew what they were looking for to begin with. I understood the process really well. I joke with most of my clients and tell them, I speak bank. I'm bilingual. I speak bank. I understand what they're looking for. But I would highly suggest, if you're even looking at doing a short sale, that you have a consultation with a certified distressed property expert. They can walk you through this process that I'm about to walk you through now with your case specific. So when you sit down, one of the first things that the agent or the broker is going to do, and I say you have to meet with a real estate agent because 99.9% of short sales must be accomplished through a real estate agent. The banks require that a third-party real estate agent be involved. Now, I know the first question that I always get asked when that happens, well, that's great, Shane, but I can't even afford to make the payment. We're already upside down. Who's going to pay the real estate fees? That's built into the amount that the bank is willing to accept. The bank is willing to accept a certain dollar amount, and they understand that real estate fees are part of the fees that have to be or traditionally paid for by the seller, so that's going to be deducted from the amount that they are going to receive. That is an acceptable practice, so don't worry about that. That's not coming from you, traditionally. But so that you need a real estate agent involved in this deal. So you're going to sit down with them. You're going to give the real estate agent a borrower's authorization form. That should be the first form that you fill out with them. What that borrower's authorization form is, gives them the right to talk to the bank to discuss the situation. The Privacy Act that's enacted says that you have to have this form on file in order for the bank to talk to them. Now, we have them as a CDPE one. As a CDPE agent, I have generic forms that some banks accept. Some of your larger banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, they have their own borrower's authorization form. Now, they didn't at first in 2008, 2009, when we started to see these. They really didn't because they didn't have a whole department dedicated to this, but they do now. So you should be able to just get those Bank of America forms. And if you're wanting to look for forms to fill out, I'll give you the site. Matter of fact, I'll put it in the show notes here for Bank of America's site. You can get an idea of what a Bank of America borrower's authorization form looks like, so you can see what you're authorizing. I'll put the certified distressed property expert up in the show notes. I'll give you a copy of it for free. That's fine. Just go to realestatemoneyandmore.com/short-sale. Head there and you'll be able to get these documents I'm talking about. But you're going to fill out that borrower's authorization so that the agent can talk to the bank and discuss the deal. Next, you're going to fill out a whole bunch of paperwork. A, you're going to have to fill out a listing agreement. Now, let me warn consumers on some of these short sales and some of the practices that some agents out there are doing. Some agents are out there are pricing the property really low just to get an offer, because they know there was a lawsuit settlement out there that said if a short sale is working, then the bank won't foreclose. Or if they have an offer on the table that's being negotiated, the judge may push off the foreclosure, and they're doing that just to basically push off the inevitable. Because if it's not selling for a realistic number, the bank's not going to accept the short sale. So when you look at this and you look at listing something, get a good comparative market analysis from the agent. Get a look at the last three or four solds. Get a look at the actives. Let's look at everything we need to look at, just like if you were trying to sell the house and you owed nothing. Let's look at what the property's worth. So when we do that, then we can evaluate what it's worth, and you can list it either slightly above and drop it or list it right at and drop it. But when we get the offer, the banks are going to evaluate the value of the property separately from us. So if it's ridiculously low, they're just not going to accept it. So pay attention to that. So you're going to wind up doing a listing agreement with that comparative market analysis. You and your agent are going to pick a price. You're going to put it active on the market. At the same time, you're going to do paperwork for the bank. And this is where it varies a little. I can't give you the standards because there are some banks that won't even look at a package until you have an offer. And there are others, like Bank of America, if you will, that if we started the process in Equator, we could start the short sale process, send all the paperwork up, they could evaluate the price of the property, and actually give us a list price they want us to put it at. Now, at that same time, we may be listing the property and trying to generate traffic. But when you start a property with a Bank of America or some of the others, the first question it asks is, do we have an offer on the property or do we not? And there's two separate processes to each one of those. If we don't, that's one process. If we do, that's another. Okay, so besides all that, let's look at what they're going to need. If you listen to my loan, that's episode 4, I think it was, Real Estate Money and More, episode 4. So if you're in iTunes or something like that, go back to episode 4. You listen to my loan episode, I talk about detailing everything, documenting everything. Well, a short sale is going to require just the same. There's a few things it's going to require. For the most part, it's probably going to require 2 years tax returns. I have seen short sales lately not require the tax returns and just go off the bank statements and pay stubs. But I would prepare to have 2 years tax returns if you're a seller trying to get a short sale done. So get your 2 years tax returns. Get your most two recent bank statements together, all pages. If it's page 1 through 9, just like I said in the loans, if it says 1 through 9 and 9 says this page intentionally left blank, but it's page 9 of 9, send it. 2 months pay stubs. Then we're going to want a budget. The bank's going to want to see a budget. They're going to want to see, what are you making? What are you spending it on? Then they want to see a hardship letter. Now, this hardship letter is basically telling your story. This is the chance for you to tell the story. Listen, we bought this property in 2005. It was one of the peak of the market. I paid $392,000 for this property. Since then, my wife and I got a divorce, so my income was cut in half. My business has dropped 60%, and the value of the property is now, instead of $392,000, $180,000. And the loan was an adjustable rate mortgage after a fixed period of 6 years, which we're coming up on. So now the new mortgage that we're going to adjust to is not feasible, and here's why. This, and that's just an example, but here's the chance to tell the story. This hardship letter is required, but it's a chance for you to tell the bank why you can't live up to your obligation of this loan. Now, I'm not trying to teach people to do what's called a strategic default. I don't want you just to default or short sell because you can't or you don't like the value of the property anymore. Because it was $382,000, it's now only $180,000. And you don't see how you could ever get back up to the 382. Well, that's not really the bank's fault as much as it is yours for a bad decision. But a lot of people have done what's called a strategic default. A lot of people do a short sale or walk away and do a deed in lieu of foreclosure just because of that case. And I don't advocate that at all. I think that if you have a true hardship, cannot make the payment anymore, somebody passed away. I had a group of five family members that owned a condo here. They also owned one in Panama City. We short sold the one in Panama City. Why? Because the father, who was the one that put it all together, had passed away. And so their income had changed quite a bit. Even though they were okay with some of it, it was still a struggle at points. So they just decided to short sell it, and the bank accepted that, no problem. So as long as it's a legitimate hardship, you'll be okay. But you need to write that hardship letter. So all of that goes up along with the contract to the negotiator. Now, the negotiator comes back with a couple of options. A, they're going to underwrite this short sale just like a underwriter would underwrite a loan. They're looking at the value of the property. They're looking at what's owed. They're looking at your hardship letter. They're looking at, can you afford it? Can you really afford it? Because if you really can afford it, they may decline the short sale. But can you really afford it? And when they get finished with all that, and let me tell you, this is why we call it a really, really, really long sale. That process can take anywhere. The fastest I've seen an answer on a short sale is 3 weeks. The longest I've seen on a short sale is well over a year. A year. Buying a short sale or selling a house via a short sale is a practice in patience. That process for them to underwrite it, approve it, could take anywhere from 3 weeks to a year. Typically, when I sell a short sale, I ask the buyers to give me 90 days and I try and get an answer within 60. We have a very methodical method that my staff uses to follow up and make sure that we're squeaking just enough to get the oil. The squeaky wheel gets the oil. We're squeaking just enough. I'm not ticking anybody off. I tell my staff, I said, listen, when you call negotiators and you're talking with them, literally I want you to be pleasantly annoying. I want you to be nice about it, but I want you to be annoying. So when they pick up the phone, they go, hey, Amber, we still know nothing. Okay, cool. We'll talk to you in 2 days. So they know that Amber's calling again in 2 days, but they don't know anything. She's very pleasant about it. That process of underwriting could take a while. What you need to make sure you do when you put the contract in place via a short sale, you need to have the addendum to the contract. And what I will do is I will put the Florida Association of Realtors short sale addendum to contract in the show notes. So I'll put you a free copy of the short sale addendum so you can look at the language. You just want to copy and paste it. If you don't live in Florida and you want to copy and paste it and put it in something else, that's great. Because in the Florida Association of Realtors, when they did that short sale addendum, it was about as layman as it gets. It said that all parties understand the seller has X days, and there's a fill in the blank there. And then it says if left blank, 90. So even the association thought 90 was a good time frame. X date to get an answer from the bank. And then 120 days to close. So it's 30 days after you get an answer from the bank. But it also spells out that nothing starts. The earnest money deposit can or cannot be deposited. That's really kind of up to the negotiation. But none of the inspection time frames, nothing happens until the bank signs off on the short sale. So that all parties understand, hey, it's going to take some time to get an answer. But once we do, then we can start and it moves on. Once that bank comes back and says, yes, we will approve this as a short sale, and here is our criteria. They normally come back with, you must not net, or we must net X dollar amount, and we have to approve the HUD. When you send that package up, you have a title company or an attorney's office, go ahead and draw you up a mock settlement statement or a mock HUD showing what the bank will net with this offer. That way the bank can kind of evaluate things and they will approve or deny some of the charges. Not everything the bank will approve. Sometimes sellers concede money to the buyers to help them with closing costs. Well, sometimes the bank will approve that and other times they won't. It really depends. And then you just have to kind of go back and negotiate with the buyer if the bank did not approve part of the deal, but approved it under the stipulation of you remove the concessions to the buyer or whatever the change was. Then you have to go back to the buyer and just say, listen, we can get this deal done, but here are the few changes to the contract the bank's not agreeing to, so we have to change them. Or the buyer can walk. I mean, the buyer has the right to walk at that point. But you now have an approved deal from the bank. Now we just move on. Now with that approval, in writing, the bank will stipulate if there is zero deficiency judgment. And if they don't, a good agent will go back to the bank and go, I need that stipulated. And they will also stipulate if the seller has to bring anything to the table. Now, wait a minute, Shane, I thought we were not bringing anything to the table because we didn't have anything. I understand that. Sometimes, and these are few and far between, but they happen enough to where I want to mention them here in the show. Sometimes the bank will say, I want a note for $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 from the seller because we're eating a whole bunch of money here. So I want a note from the seller for $10,000 paid over 180 months, zero interest, signed at closing. Well, now that's something that we need to talk about. As a seller, you need to discuss that. Are you willing to sign that to get rid of your deficiency and be done with the house? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But that might be something we need to discuss. So there's kind of your process of a short sale. After we've done through all this, and that typically it takes 2 to 3 months to get that process done. But once we get that letter from the bank, then we can start a regular sale process because now we know what the bank will accept. Then we know that the bank is accepting a payoff short of what they are owed. There's one final kink I want to talk about because not all of us have just a one lien property. And what do you mean by one lien property, Shane? I mean that if your house only has one mortgage on it, what if it has two? What if it has three? I've seen as high as eight. I'm not quite sure how somebody would take an eight position lien. But I have seen it as high as eight liens on one property. My goodness. We have to negotiate with each lender. Now, the further down the line you are, the less position of strength you have as a lender. So, for instance, let's go back to our $200,000 loan and the property is only worth $125,000. Well, if it's a $200,000 first, and let's say there's a $25,000 second, so now we really owe $225,000 on the property. We have to negotiate with both of them because the property is still only worth $125,000. But the $25,000 second lien position is really a very weak position and typically will accept extremely low payoffs. Sometimes they won't, but most of the time they will. I've seen them accept $1,000, $3,000 for that $25,000 and be done. Why? Because if it went to foreclosure, what's our alternative? If that went to foreclosure and that second lien wanted to get paid off, they would have to buy out the $200,000 first, just so they could be in first position to foreclose. Well, I've already spent $25,000 on this house. Why in the world would I want to buy a $200,000 lien out just to get $125,000 back? That makes no sense. So what makes more sense, if I'm going to lose on this deal anyways, let me get $3,000. And the agent has to negotiate with both the first and the second, saying, okay, not only are we going to do a short sale, we're going to sell it for $125,000, but Mr. $200,000 first lien, we have a second lien over here that's owed $25,000. We're going to give them 10%. We're going to give them $2,500, and I need you to okay that. Typically, the first will okay a certain dollar amount. Sometimes it's $25,000. Sometimes they'll only okay $1,000. Because they know that the second lien is negotiating from a position of weakness. So that's a whole nother dynamic. And then again, like I said, if you have a third, fourth, fifth, that has to be done all the way down the line. an eighth position lien is negotiating from such a point of weakness that I think when I negotiated that lien 5 through 8, I offered them $300 each, and all of them took it, because I think lien 4 I offered $500, lien 3 I offered $700, and they all took it because they knew that there was. I mean, it's either A, we lose everything, or B, we get these couple $100, and that's it. So a good agent, and this is where agents, if you know what you're doing in the short sale business, it's not that difficult. There's a lot of agents that tried to jump in the short sale business that it was difficult because they didn't know what they were doing. But now you kind of know behind the scenes what's happening and how and why a short sale may make sense for you or for someone you know that's struggling to make a mortgage payment. Now, I see these becoming less and less. And it's funny because I work really in two separate areas. I work in a resort area, and then I work in a military area. It's almost like two different businesses. And in my resort area, I hardly ever see short sales anymore. It's July of 2014. I hardly ever see short sales in that area anymore. Whereas in the military area, I still see quite a few. We probably have, 10 or 15 listed right now in the books that we're negotiating. So I don't see those staying around for long right now. But at the same time, real estate's very cyclical. So will we see the big crash like we saw before? Who knows? I don't have a crystal ball. But I do know that this process right here is a very viable process for someone who's spending too much money to try and maintain a property they can't. And here's one last tip. Ready? I'm glad you stayed here. Hopefully this makes up for the whole thing. One last tip. Do not spend retirement money trying to catch up a property that you think you're going to let go. Don't do it. Because even if you get that judgment, retirement money under today's laws is untouchable. Retirement money is untouchable. You can't touch it. So even that judgment can't touch retirement money. So I get too many phone calls from people saying, Shane, I've spent through my entire retirement account. I'm done. I'm tapped out now. I guess I need to short sell. You shouldn't have spent through your retirement money. You just don't do that. You don't have to do that. That's non-touchable money. Don't spend your retirement account. At least not until you talk to a broker. Talk to a certified distressed property expert. If you want me to hook you up with somebody in your hometown that's that way, leave a comment in the on the page, realestatemoneyandmore.com/short-sale. You don't have to leave a comment going, hey, I owe way too much and I need help, please. No. Shoot me a quick message. Would you message me at or send me a private message on Twitter or Facebook, which we've got the links in the show. And I'll hook you up with a certified distressed property expert in your area. I've got a network across the country that talks through these things. So I can help you out there. But don't go through your retirement accounts until you've discussed other options like a short sale. I'm not saying it is a fix-all, but I am saying something that is strongly should be considered. Well, here we are to the end of the next episode. I hope you picked up a few things on short sales, and I hope that you understand it's something that shouldn't be stigmatization, because half of the country has went through either a foreclosure or a short sale now. So you should seriously consider it if you're struggling to keep up with that mortgage. But again, I hope you picked up a little bit on the process. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.